as I mentioned before, there's different ways that Jesus has been viewed over time. There is almost an endless amount of opinions about him. And so what we typically like to do at Central Valley Church is take a part of the Bible and sort of run through it and walk through it and examine what it says. We're doing something slightly a bit different. We're going to look at a topic like, is Jesus real? And we're going to see how the Bible sort of engages with that, but also look at what other things have to say about that reality. So let's deal with this crucial one. Is he real? Now, in a historical sense, this is a pretty absurd question to sort of ask. And I'll get to why, if you're someone who studies history or knows history, why it's that case. But I still think it's a question worth asking and one engaging with nonetheless. Because there are underlying issues that come from not believing that Jesus is real. So is he real? Short answer, yes. If he wasn't, this would be like what we're doing right now would be a whole waste of time. I would tell you, go sleep off your whatever you did last night. It would be the whole idea of church, Christianity, and everything that revolves around it would just be a waste of time if he wasn't real. But I'm assuming you don't want the short answer, or maybe you do, you just want this to wrap up so you can go home. But let me try this. I'm going to break up our time together in two ways. Firstly, I'm going to look at the evidence. And secondly, I want to look at why it matters. So let's look at the evidence. A few years ago, one of my children told us that the fire services visited the school with a fire engine. Now, at this point, as this child sort of told this story to my wife and I, we thought, hey, that's plausible. You know, the fire services do on occasion visit churches. But it's what followed that made us sort of question a few things. This child in particular began to share how the firefighters allowed the kids to use the hose from the fire engine. We prodded a bit and said, so, you know, did they help you as you use the fire hose? And this child said, yep. We got to use it, and we even got to spray our friends with the fire hose. If you don't know what firefighters' services do, they rarely, if ever, allow children on their own to use hoses, let alone use it by themselves. So the details there weren't matching up. Now, at this point, we could go, hey, we love our child, you know, let's just believe this story. But it brought up, do we question it? Is it true? Maybe was it partly true? Or was it all just a lie? How do we determine that? Now, the discipline of history is really investigating the facts that are there, the evidence that is presented. And so we did the same with my child's story. We investigated whether it was true. And one way we do that is by examining the first-hand sources to see if the event actually occurred. So we asked another of our children, who also attends the school, if they had seen or heard of any firefighters coming to school that day. They said no. We also looked up secondary sources, like the school and teachers' emails, the newsletter, the website, to see if they had mentioned anything about the fire services coming to school. They said nothing. And as we looked at it, we were like, oh, wait a minute, there's something about this story that our child was telling isn't true. There were some details that were plausible. It seemed true enough that the firefighters could visit school. Yet as we sort of investigated and came to him, we realized there was no evidence of it actually happening. Our child had been lying. Good story, but not true at all. Yet notice how we determined the truth of that matter. We examined the sources. Now, for all of us in this room here today, none of us were around when Jesus was around, unless you are phenomenally old. So how do we know it's reliable? Well, we do like what we do today. We use sources. We investigate and examine the evidence. Now, I know that you may be thinking, I get that today that we have phones and cameras. And you might think, why didn't Jesus come in a time and age when there were phones and cameras? Wouldn't that be a bit more of a compelling time to come? Because, you know, phones and cameras are the highest form or tool of capturing what is real. Right? unless you've watched movies or seen TikTok and Instagram filters. And if you are with an untrained eye, you could see the videos that we post that are unbelievable, but somehow picture it believable. Cameras and phones, as good as the technology is, don't always capture the truth of the matter, do they? Not to mention how deepfake technology is used today. I don't know if you've seen that. That's pretty phenomenal what people can do with a sort of just a few cameras and data and it compiling. A face could be your face and how they use that. Then there's also the issue of reliability of sources themselves in terms of just bias. Hence the famous phrase that gets tossed around these days about fake news. Everyone's calling out, you've just got fake news. News outlets, political parties, it's all fake news. Everyone is reporting false stuff, but we're reporting the truth. So there's that issue of are the sources reliable, and then is there a bias involved? And you've got to wrestle with that even today. So if you've looked at Instagram or Facebook or how you get your news, there is a sense in which you need to determine what is being reported, what is being told to you, is whether it's true or not. And this all seems a little bit depressing, doesn't it? Because if you go, oh, actually, there's a lot of avenues in which the truth isn't told, that lies are more often told than truth. And I mean, you could just go, oh, look, we can't really know the truth of things. But stick with me, because it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all that these sources aren't reliable. And it's worth understanding context and intention behind it all. Now, quickly, on the issue of bias, because we all have a bias, please don't be naive to think that when anything is given to you, there is no bias with it. Even a reporter or a scientist, when they report facts, still have bias in their report and discovery. Yet that doesn't mean that the evidence that they present to you is any less true. It just means we need to understand all the pieces together to get a full picture. Okay, it's a lot of preamble, but let's get back to Jesus. Sources. Let's look at that for a minute. I would actually want to say there is such a phenomenal amount of sources surrounding Jesus and his life that it's quite breathtaking. Let me put it this way. You don't have to answer if you don't know who these guys are, but do you believe there is historical evidence for a philosopher called Socrates or Plato? That they existed. What about Caesar, Julius Caesar, one of the most famous characters in history? Do you believe he existed? I hope you go, oh yeah, I think so. You know, we see movies about them, surely they're true. I'd argue they existed, but what I want to examine is the actual sources that present us whether they existed or not. And then I want us to look at the sources, same type of sources, that presents us the picture of Jesus. So is the amount of sources the first? So think of, if you like, think how many pictures were taken of this event or this person. And then I want to look at the time gap in between when this person or event was recorded. Now, on this point alone is pretty remarkable. So behind me is a sample of famous ancient sources we have copies of first-hand sort of sources we have surrounding Jesus and the early church. Notice that Homer, if you don't know who, he's not from The Simpsons, he famously wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey. And there are, in terms of historical data, evidence around a person, there is 1,757 ancient copies or fragments of his work. But notice the gap between when Homer existed and the earliest manuscripts we have of his work. It's about a 400-year gap. In other words, the earliest manuscripts we have of Homer's work is 400 years old. And so you think about 400 years after the event, the time the person wrote that, that's a lot of faith you have to have in whether the copies we have now are really that reliable or true. Now, I'm not saying they're not. It's just you've just got to factor that into your head. Now compare that with the sources we have on Jesus found in the New Testament. This is remarkable in a historical sense. We have, like, I think it's over now, 5,795 copies, almost four times the amount we have of Homer. That's not even including Caesar. Like, Caesar was, in one sense, historically speaking, almost more famous than Homer. But notice the time gap, almost a 40-year gap, which is incredible in a historical sense. So in other words, how this played out in history, when there was an event or a person you wanted to know about, there was usually a time gap in which the evidence or historical records were presented or made up, or sorry, not made up, but like just recorded about around that event. There is a 40-year gap between Jesus and the events being recorded and sort of presented to the wider audience. That is just remarkable. It is unheard of. The evidence of Jesus in a historical sense, in terms of sources, is overwhelming. But I mentioned bias. And so we could say, or someone could say, well, the New Testament, so those documents in the big red, in that big red pile, it's just biased. Of course they're going to say Jesus existed. And so they just manufactured a very well, you know, thought out lie. So let me quickly look at sources that don't have a Christian bias. In other words, they're not pro-Jesus. They're actually the opposite. So the Greco-Roman sort of sources, the people who weren't of sort of Christian, sort of Israel, and they wrote a lot of stuff, but here's a list of people. You've got the pagan historian Thallus. He wrote around AD 55, and in the third volume of his histories, he mentions a darkness coinciding with the crucifixion of Jesus. He describes it merely as a natural eclipse of the sun, and then remarks, his remarks were preserved by an ancient Christian named Julius Africanus, but not as a kind of proof of Jesus, but there you start to see that there are things that the events of the Christian sort of record of Jesus' death coincide. You got Mara Bar Serapion. So he wrote around AD 70. He refers to Jesus as a king, teacher, and martyr, and he compares him to the Greek greats of Pythagoras and Socrates, who also persecuted. You got the Roman historian Cornelius Tacitus. So he wrote around AD 56 to AD 120, and he scathingly refers to Jesus' execution under Pontius Pilate and describes the movement surrounding him as a deadly superstition. And this is really important because as he was an important sort of Roman historian, he chronicled what was going on around that time. So even he acknowledges, hey, Jesus is around. Then you've got the Roman administrator Pliny the Younger. He says that the early Christians worshipped Jesus as a god. Then you got the Roman historian AD 120 refers to Roman Jews and how they believed in Jesus. And then you've got the Greek satirist, is that how you say it? Greek sort of playwrights who wrote satires. Lucian of Samosata ridicules Jesus as a crucified sophist, who taught people to deny the gods. He just kind of teases Jesus. He acknowledges that he's around. And I could go on and you'd probably be bored, but you've got the Greek intellectual Seleucus around 175. He just thought he was a magician. So a lot of people, in other words, close to the period when Jesus was around, acknowledged that he was a real figure. Then you've got the Jewish references of the first century Jewish aristocrat and historian Josephus. If you don't know anything about Josephus, he wasn't pro-Jesus, but he did say that he was a famous teacher, healer or trickster and martyr. And then you've got the Talmud, which is an ancient exposition of Jewish law that contains a passage, or it contains a whole bunch of stuff, but kind of justifying Jesus' execution. They acknowledge that he existed, but they thought that Jesus led Israel astray and practiced sorcery, and so they were right to put him to death. And they also refer to Jesus' mother, who they claim was an adulteress, because virgin births, they don't happen. Okay, that's probably the most boring part of it all. But there is evidence, not just from a Christian sort of, you know, New Testament world sense. There are others around who acknowledge that Jesus existed. He's real. But I do want to show you then, if we're going to say the New Testament, so those documents that contain evidence about Jesus, I do want to say that even our own documents don't just go, oh, look, we just want you to believe in Jesus. We don't care about the truth. We'll twist facts and we'll make it believable. Like we have a strong bias. We don't care about truth. Actually, that's not how our documents work. It would be really easy or naive to claim that Christians don't care about truth. So somehow we just love believing made up stories. So kind of just quickly examine some of the sources, and you had Sandra read some of them. Read with me again. Luke, who's a doctor who writes a historical biography of Jesus' life, says this: many have undertaken to compile a narrative about the events that have been fulfilled among us. In other words, Jesus' life and all the way to his death and resurrection. Just as the original witnesses and servants of the word handed them down to us. So it also seemed good to me, since I have carefully investigated everything from the very first, to write to you in an orderly sequence, most honorable Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things about which you have been instructed. Our documents care about whether it's true or not. Then you got what John, another follower of Jesus, who wrote another historical account of Jesus' life. And this is what he says. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, his followers, that are not written in this book. But what he has recorded in the book of, or the Gospel of John, encourage you to read it. These are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his word. Then he goes on later to say that this is the disciple who testifies to these things, like testifies the word that you use in a court of law. To someone who testifies, who witnesses about the truth, we know that his testimony is true, and there are also many other things that Jesus did, which if every one of them were written down, I don't suppose even the world itself could contain the books that would be written. Jesus did a whole bunch of stuff that aren't recorded, but what we've recorded so you may know it is true. And then you have a guy called Paul, who hated Christianity, eventually meets Jesus, and then becomes one of Christianity's greatest champions. And this is what he writes to a church in the city of Corinth. He says, "For I, Paul, have passed on to you as most important what I also received, that Christ died for our sins, according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, and that he was raised on the third day, according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas," to Peter, "then to the 12. Then he appeared to over 500 brothers and sisters at one time. Most of them are still alive, but some have fallen asleep," in other words, died. "Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles, last of all, as one born at the wrong time, he also appeared to me." Now, if we were all about, let's just like, you know, fairy tales, this is just the tooth fairy, Santa Claus. Like, if we just were all about lies, as I said, tap out. But that's just a small sampling of what's found in the New Testament, those documents surrounding Jesus and the early church, that we care about recording things accurately. Now, you could disagree that their intentions were for truth. But I would argue, I'm not sitting up here wanting to believe something that's not true. I'm not wanting to present to you something that, you know, was maybe plausible, like my son, maybe the fire department came, but as you examine the sources, you just find it was all just a very well put together lie. It is worth investigating the truth of things. Even if you're a Christian, it's worth you knowing that your faith, your trust in Jesus isn't grounded on just really nice sentiment, but it is grounded in something true, tangible, that the evidence says something really important. But before I examine, okay, what's the point of all this? Like, why does it really matter? I want to put together some of the raw data that nearly every historian agrees on. So you can find this as well. There's a little book, a guy called John Dixon, who's a historian, wrote a little helpful book called The Doubter's Guide to Jesus. And he kind of argues this a bit more, well, not just a bit, a lot more better than I do. But here are some facts, at least, that nearly every historian agrees on. Ready? That the name was Jesus. There was a guy called Jesus. That the phase and time frame of his public ministry, Galilee, was during Galilee and Judea, during Pontius Pilate's governorship, so AD 26 to AD 36. That the name of his mother was Mary. That there was an ambiguous nature to his birth. That one of the names of his brothers was James. Most historical accounts agree that he had fame as a teacher. That he had fame as a miracle worker or sorcerer. That there was an attribution to him as the title of Messiah or Christ, which just means king. His kingly status in the eyes of some people did follow him as king. That the time and manner of his execution, so the crucifixion around the Passover, so they all agree that this event happened around there. That there was an involvement of both the Roman and Jewish leadership in his death. The coincidence of an eclipse at the time of his crucifixion, most people agree with that. The report of Jesus' appearance to his followers after his death. If the alternative version of the Josephus passage is accepted, which many be debated, they all agree that Jesus appeared to his followers. And then the flourishing of a movement that worshipped Jesus after his death. So most historians agree with those, just the raw data. This is what we have about Jesus. So what though? What does all this matter? Now, an obvious thing straight up, I could say, well, the truth matters, so, you know, you should care about the truth. I don't know, like, there's truth about cows and dogs that are there that doesn't really impact the way I live. So why does Jesus being real, a real historical figure, why does it matter for me? What does it matter for you? Look, I like fiction as much as the next person. I love its storytelling capacity. I love how fiction can sort of transport you into another world, help you consider and see things you wouldn't normally consider. I love how fiction engages the imagination, and fiction can also communicate elements of truth in ways you've never sort of considered. But here's the thing. I wouldn't base my whole life on fiction. I wouldn't make decisions every day on the basis of fiction. Let me give you this example. On the 21st of February 2009, I married my wife, Catherine. I didn't marry her because our relationship was fiction. Like, that would have been awkward, wouldn't it? Like, if what drew me to the altar to commit to her, to hold and to love, to cherish, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, I wouldn't have said those things if our relationship was based on fiction. Like, if she wasn't even real, like, how good would that be if, you know, people stood up as this fake person was brought down the aisle and, you know, I was holding hands and you're like, oh, that person doesn't exist. But one, it'd be awkward for me as well as the rest of you. But in one sense, it's important that our relationship wasn't based on fiction because of what that relationship meant. In other words, if my wife was a liar, or I was a liar, like, I know we lie, but if everything we based our trust in was all just made-believe, then it would be a heartache of a relationship. It was because we loved and trusted one another that we knew the truth of who we are, the truth of what we said and say, that all of that moment mattered. And trust is incredibly important. And trust is intrinsically woven with the truth. You will not trust something that's not true. You can, but not in that full sense of the word. So here's what I'd argue, why this should matter. Because I think all of us want something real, something reliable, something true, because we don't want to find out later in life that it was all a lie, that it was all a crock. Even if the lie ends up being drink and be merry for tomorrow we die, if that's a lie and you find out at the end of your life, oh, there was a much bigger truth, I think you'd want to know. There is a sense in which I think deep down, whether you like, and I know we're obsessed with just how our media presents lies in all different platforms, why we love engaging movies. But I think deep down we want something true, something real. I still remember not long before my firstborn Evie was born, one of my oldest friends admitted to me that he had found that his wife had found out that he had cheated on her for years in his marriage. It was devastating, heartbreaking. I still remember that we were still on waiting for Catherine to be for Evie to be born, and so we were just waiting for that day. I had to go meet with him. He was 2 hours away. I rushed over to go, what is going on? And it was so fascinating just finding out all this stuff about him that I never knew. And I still remember talking to his wife afterwards so vividly that she turned to me and said at one point during just trying to navigate the devastation of it all, she just said to me, I felt like my whole life was a lie. Like this relationship, you know, they went through all the motions. He'd cheated on her for years, multiple times. And it had impacted everything in her world and everything in his world. It shattered and it broke so many things. Friends, the last thing I want to give you is a lie. But friends, you need to understand that trust, the truth of it, matters in the most crucial of ways. Life in many ways is built on trust. And I get the allure of just believing the lie or being lost in lies. But can I ask you to consider that all of life functions on trust? The seat you're sitting on, like I don't think I saw anyone touch the seat and wait. I think all of you were like, oh, there's a seat, I'm going to sit on it. From the car you drive, the job you work in, the friends and family you have, all of it is impacted by this idea of trust and truth. You will not trust or believe someone who has shown you time and time again they cannot be trusted or is true. Now I get that the historical evidence of Jesus won't necessarily wow you, won't necessarily wake up tomorrow going, oh, wow, Jesus, I love him, because the historical sort of truth of it all was presented in such a compelling way by Pierre. Like, I don't think that for a second. But it does go a long way in establishing and or building trust. And here's the thing, the Christian faith, the whole point of church, this Sunday gathering, isn't about a religion, but a relationship. You see, the thing that keeps us here united and working through our mess together, working together, even though it would be far easier to walk away from these relationships, the reason we trust in God and trust in each other is because the whole thing is about a relationship with God. You see, what Jesus came to offer us wasn't just historical evidence of his existence, though he did do that, but the evidence that relationship with God is possible. That relationship with God actually breathes life into our world. That relationship with God is the fullness of joy and the fullness of life, not the restriction of it. Jesus said, I came to give life and life to the full. In other words, he wasn't like, you know what? I'm going to start a religion and I'm going to make it about just sapping all the joy and pleasure and goodness of life. That's not why he came. The truth matters because relationships matter. And relationships are based on trust. What the Bible calls faith. Like, I know that Christian, you know, people like to stereotype Christians as faith being a blind leap in the dark. You know, Christians just close our eyes and we just sort of walk around going, oh, Jesus, that's not how we function, or you should function if you are a Christian. Faith, the actual word in the Bible, is far closer to trust. A trust in the truth, a trust in the evidence, a trust in a person, a real historical person. You see, what Jesus came to offer is life in him. It was what was once called a great exchange, his life for ours, his death for ours, in order to bring about a restored relationship with God. Which leads me to the final reason I think it all matters. Truth and trust matter because it's just how our whole world functions. But here's the thing, I don't know the story of your life. I don't know what you've been through. I don't know how dark your story has been. Maybe it's just been pleasant. Maybe you've just had an awesome run of it all. But here's my observation. We're obsessed with stories. We're obsessed with being part of something bigger. We want our lives to matter. And I know for so many of us, the way we view our lives, we see we've got a job, we've got a career, we've got family and friends. And we view our life through those lenses and go, what's the point of it all? I've spoken to so many people who care less about Jesus, go, yeah, I work, I've got a house, I've got a family, I've got all this stuff, and I feel so dissatisfied. I don't know your story, I don't know your life, but there is, I would argue, if you start to dig deep, you will start to see that your own story feels a bit, I don't know, like I'm trying to find something and I can't find it. So I go to the next thing, take up cycling, I don't know. You know, you try to pursue things because you want to be part of something bigger. Like, it's really fascinating. I went to watch, with my brother-in-law, went to watch Avatar, you know, the Avatar, the new James Cameron film. And the cinema was packed. I'm not going to ruin the story for you. But what I found really fascinating, at the end of the movie, people just clapped. It's like, I've never been in a cinema where people clapped. But what I noticed is that people were like, we were part of something. I mean, it was really fascinating. I went down to Sydney for Christmas Day and caught up with a whole bunch of people. It's funny, even the conversations we have today. So what do you watch? What are you watching? Have you watched any good TV series? Have you watched any good movies? And I found it such an interesting thing that we would ask each other that. But it's our way that our culture connects. Have you watched something like a story that can entertain me for a little while? Because the reality of my own life is just so boring. The reality of my own life is obsolete. This is how I want to end. Your story isn't obsolete. It isn't boring. God cares about your story. And that if you come to trust in Jesus, you will start to, instead of having sort of a zoomed in lens and going, oh, this just doesn't make sense, it's messy, you take the blinkers off and you'll see, hey, my life is part of something bigger. That God's story of the universe, of existence, involves you. That when you come to trust in Jesus and relationship with him is restored, you realize that you're part of something bigger. Something bigger, so that even your mundane existence of life, like going to work, eating, talking to people, or not wanting to talk to people, is framed in something more compelling, and something more glorious. Can I argue that when we consider Jesus real and you find out that he is, that it's not just a random fact about something like you find out on Wikipedia, but it's life-changing. You will enter into a relationship that you can examine, make sure it's true, and a relationship that makes your story so much more bigger and fascinating. And the invitation to that story, if you don't know, is really simple, like any other relationship, is trust. Now, I get it. I know that you might not straight away go, look, I'm going to trust Jesus right now, but you may. And if that's you, come talk to us. But if anything, can I just challenge you to build on that trust? Examine it. Because look, let me end with these words. This is what John, one of the writers, a gospel account, a biography of Jesus' life, he says, but these are written so that you may believe. We record these events so that you may read them, examine them, pull them apart, and believe that what? That Jesus is the Messiah. In other words, the King of Kings, the true ruler of existence. That he truly is the Son of God, in other words, God himself. And that by believing, you may have life in his name. That's the beauty of the Christian faith. That by trusting in this relationship, by knowing Jesus, you may have life and life to the full. That's what we want for you. So let me pray.